This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Plant a seed, plant a flower, plant a rose, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Big wins for Arsenal and Everton, but there's trouble at Milford Klopp. It's Monday, 29th of April. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Oh, lift your weary heads, everybody. It's Monday, but it feels good, I think. Because you're with us. hey, come on. There's love in the air. There are tickets up for grabs for our live show.
Yes.
What more could you want, everybody, quite frankly? Yes, tickets for our biggest ever live show went on sale on Friday. Thank you to everyone who's got involved so far. We can't wait to see you there. If you haven't got yours yet, then don't wait another second. Pause this right now and get yours at footballramblelive.com.
You don't even need to pause. You can probably do it at the same time.
We want them to focus on what we're saying.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
If they don't focus, they might not buy the most expensive ones.
That's true. It's a one-night-only performance at the London Palladium, as if you didn't know, on Friday, the 20th of September. That's right, Friday night at the Palladium. Bloody Nora, it's going to be big. We're taking you down the Football Ramble time tunnel, a journey through the last 17 years of the most outrageous and hilarious moments in football history. It's going to be a belting night. So get your tickets at footballramblelive.com. That's footballramblelive.com.
Marcus, I'm hearing rumours that your giddy aunt, Gordon Bennett, and yep. Ruddy Nora might be in attendance.
Yes.
Can you confirm or deny?
My giddy aunt's son will be there.
Ooh. Can I just say as well, because it's an emotional plea to those who claim to be members of the Luke Nation. If you are genuinely, and there's a lot of members of the Luke Nation have already shown me they've bought tickets.
Yeah.
But if you are genuinely a member of the Luke Nation,
you're going to do a quick rally before the show.
You need to know this. Friday, September 20th is actually my birthday.
No way.
It's my birthday.
Bloody
so
Nora.
If you're a member of the Luke Nation, you want to spend my birthday with me, footballramblelive.com.
Is it actually your birthday?
Yes, it is.
That's what I was going to say, because that would be quite an outlandish lie.
No, it is. Mm. It is my birthday.
I want to see your driving license. Not for the first time.
It honestly is. So footballramblelive.com to not only see an amazing live show, but really solidify your credentials as a member of the Luke Nation by spending a birthday with me.
You're going to get a right good gungeon.
Yeah, I might do, actually.
Yeah, you're going to get a birthday gungeon it's the 90s.
And then we'll do the show.
Whatever.
I insist on a birthday gungeon every year for my nearest and dearest. In a tribute to not just Mel's House Party, but the children's TV channel Nickelodeon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Should be a good one.
Yeah,
should be a good one. Right, let's have some highlights of the weekend, starting with you, Luke Moore.
Well, we learned last week, didn't we, from Jim, we investigated this quite intensively and came to the conclusion that the reason Man City may or may not win the league this season is because there has been a chilling medieval portent that Carl Walker actually laid an egg. Which could mean the impending apocalypse. Similar to
probably going to be a very bad harvest.
It could be
a
bad harvest.
Another child on the way.
And what he's also started doing, based on the Nottingham Forest game, is celebrating goals that Man City score by grabbing teammates' noses very aggressively and wiggling them.
That's right.
Like it's some kind of, I'm going to say part of a kind of medieval witch spell.
Yeah. Which you keep the devil in there.
Yeah. And maybe that's how he lays his eggs. Maybe he kind of wiggles the nose, says a little spell on his mind, and an egg pops out. But I just think Carl Walker, for many, many reasons, a lot of people who listen to this show regularly will know this anyway. Mm-hmm. He's just a man that needs to be watched. Watch him between now and the end of the
season. You're not the first person to say that. But yeah, so he's the nose wagglings and grip. It's a real good grip.
If I'm putting it in order of the top three things I'm worried about with Carl Walker, three through to one. Number three is the quite chaotic nature of his domestic affairs. Number two is the egg laying.
Yeah.
And number one is the nose wobbling.
I mean, Guardiola, he did it to
Walker the week before, I think.
He did, but he'll be hurting this morning. He really will be. And even when Haaland scored, Walker still had a little fiddle.
Walker's fiddling. He's fiddling. That's what he's doing.
Jim? Mine was a lot more straightforward than that. It was Bayer Leverkusen being 2-0 down and yet equalising in the 96th minute because they will not lose.
They love it.
They're not in great form, but they're still not losing. They're partying from winning the league and they're still not losing. It's like, you've got a treble to win here.
Yeah.
Come on.
I know, but it's like the unbeaten run. And getting a record for that is the most important thing for them. It's remarkable.
Which is great.
They just will not be beaten.
It's great. Mm. And I think it takes a lot of intensity and a lot of professionalism because as soon as Portsmouth won the league, they wrapped their hand. They won the foreign game.
97 points.
Yeah, they won the foreign game this season, but the game after they won the league, I mean, that was a shit show.
Yeah. It suggested that they,
Bayer Leverkusen were still maintaining that intensity and they really want to not lose for the whole season, which is amazing.
It is indeed. My highlight of the weekend came from the North London Derby when a lot of Spurs fans were taunting Bukayo Saka and there was like, you let your country down and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I thought to myself, I mean, he's not a Tory MP. But
yet.
But
that'd be quite the turn.
Yeah,
but incredibly disappointing. And, you know, he whips in the corner and they score and a little cut to the ears of saying, sorry, what was that?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the second goal and he runs over purposely.
Yeah.
And I love it. I absolutely love it. And what I love is how those absolute dickheads who say that, and they happen to be Spurs fans. Every football club's got them. So again, this is not, I'm not having a dig at Spurs particularly, is that they shout what they want and they give it plenty. And it would have been nastier back in the day. And hopefully, you know, those, you know, we're trying to get rid of that. But they're basically, they feel that they can shout anything. And when a football player just turns around and goes, did you like that? Just like, get a hold of yourselves, you fully grown people.
But
I loved it when Adebayor did that celebration to Arsenal. Do you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, you say stuff, all right, well, I'll answer you.
It was happening.
I love it so much.
I was at the game and it was happening with Rice as well when he was taking corners. And then when Rice...
He did it as well.
It's a Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah, you've got to accept it. If you dish it out, you've got to take it.
But that's the thing though, you know, it's exactly right. Let's go there now. Tottenham 2, Arsenal 3. I mean, what a first half it was for Arsenal. And the three goals in that first half obviously were enough to win the game in the end.
Yeah, it was a really chaotic half. I don't think I've ever seen a game where Arsenal have been 3-0 up and I've kind of thought, how has this happened?
After only having
28%
possession.
Definitely. By the time Arsenal took some control, it was deep into the second half. Yeah. And then David Raya makes that mistake and lets Spurs back in. The rest of it, it was absolute chaos. Very neighbourly from Pierre-Emile Højbjerg and also from David Raya.
Yeah.
So it was friendly at least. Gifts were exchanged.
Yeah.
Nice to see it be so cordial.
Christmas Day truce in the First World War.
Yeah, it was a remarkable game of football. And as Jim says, look, in that first half, at 3-0 down, Spurs would go off the pitch thinking, what on earth's happened there? I mean, obviously they had one that was a very tight VAR call. They'd hit the post. They'd gone close. I mean,
yeah, it was margin.
Romero seemed to be involved in everything.
His heat map is hilarious. Did you see it?
Yeah, it was.
He spent a good portion of the game when Spurs were quite far behind, just up front.
Yeah, it paid off though.
The first half particularly was very, very strange. I mean, Spurs kept winning the ball high up the pitch, which is exactly what you want to do. Mm. And you, and it reminded me a bit of when we were talking a while back when Chelsea were beaten heavily by Arsenal, and they conceded very early on. And you, and we made the point on the show that, you know, the pressure's all on Arsenal here. Your season's over, Chelsea, right? You can give them a bloody nose here. So just get up and at them early. There's no reason you can't be as intense, as quick, and as kind of hard-working as them. And they just capitulated. They conceded, the Trossard scored, I think, after about 3 or 4 minutes, and it was that, really. This game was different. Spurs were pushing really, really hard over and over again. They kept getting success putting the ball up the pitch. Mm-hmm. And I think I counted 5 or 6 times just sat in my seat where they almost lacked this conviction. They were so frightened of what Arsenal could do. They gave him way too much respect. And 5 or 6 times they won the ball up in the kind of the right wing area, high up the pitch, and every time it ended up back at Romero at the halfway line, because they were like, oh, hang on a minute here, we don't want to kind of get caught. And of course they did keep getting caught anyway. But then having said all that, you know, there's a really tight offside, which was a lucky ricochet into Van der Ven's path anyway, but it was tight offside. Mm-hmm. It was given, because that's what offside is these days. And then obviously, as you said, Romero hit the post from a header, which, you know, on another day could have gone in and it could have been a different story. But what happened was, Spurs, I felt, with Vicario at the back, he just gets targeted at set pieces all the time now.
Particularly from Ben White.
Corners, but it's not just that. It's just the corners are whipped right on top of him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't seem to have the physical presence to be able to deal with it. And you could probably make an argument that one of the corners that resulted in an Arsenal goal was a foul by Ben White. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you can't really rely on that. I mean, you've got to be strong as a goalkeeper. You can use your fucking hands, for God's sake. You know, you can use your hands to catch the ball. Raya took so many balls. He took so many, he claimed
he's
so many.
He's very good at that.
Yeah, he dominated that whole kind of area, really, which is what you want your goalkeeper to do. So that was kind of the difference. I thought one of the differences as well in the first half was the fact that it's quite hard to imagine, I think, that Udogie would have had as much of a problem with Saka as Davis did. Mm-hmm. I mean, Davis had his pants pulled down.
Well, that, I mean, that Saka goal, from Saka's point of view, it's a beauty. From Davis's point of view, it's like...
It's
easy to say when you're watching. I understand that, but... It is the classic, you've got to show him down the line, and he could have done, I think.
Yeah, he could have. Saka always does that, and not many people seem to be able to stop it.
Yeah.
And I would just finish by saying that the difference for me, and although Spurs really came into it the second half, and what would have been great would have been if Spurs had scored one of those early chances, because it would have given not just Spurs confidence, it would have given Arsenal a kick up the arse saying, shit, we need to do something here because we need to win, really.
Yeah.
And it would have made the game even better than it already was. But what I would also say was, to me, it was a massive... The key differences were... The two big differences, Arsenal have got forward players in great form, and Spurs really don't. And Arsenal are a fucking amazing defensive unit.
Well, yeah.
Like, they're so difficult to break down. And it was only that mistake and then obviously that penalty, which meant that Spurs scored at all. I just thought, you know, if you can come into half time 3-0 up, having had so little of the ball, so little play away from home, it's just, to me, it feels like the hallmark of a good side. And it's the first time I've ever heard Spurs fans around me were booing at half time because they were 3-0 down, but it was like a confused booing.
Well, this is it.
And I couldn't really work out what happened.
That's why so many of us have enjoyed Postecoglou at Spurs this season, because they keep going. And that's the thing, at 3-0 down at half time, they weren't just, as you say, the regular boo boys. They were confused boo boys.
Yeah.
And I think
boo?
Yeah,
it was a bit like that. It was a boo.
Yeah, it's because their
team... like a dog who'd lost its ball.
Exactly.
Booers.
Yeah.
We were saying booers.
I'll make my point.
Yeah, please do. That'd be a good one, mate.
Better. Because Spurs had done all right in that first half.
Yeah.
They'd gone about their task, you know, and it was if on another day they go in maybe even ahead, you know. And I think that the Postecoglou's attacking philosophy and so on is so entertaining. And it's not like a, you know, we want Erik ten Hag to stay in the job, because, and we'll come on to them in a bit. But actually, I think the Spurs fans love him, and rightly so, because it is entertaining. They keep going. And nearly got right back in the game.
Absolutely. I mean, there is still a lot of anxiety in my body from that second half. Like, genuinely, it was such a bizarre afternoon. We spoke on Friday about how important it was to play the game and not the occasion. But I think the occasion was just essentially overwhelming and just completely defined how it was. And I think because Saka and Havertz were so clinical with their finishes, that's the margin, right?
Definitely.
Postecoglou talked about the details and the margins after the game. I think he's absolutely right. And if either of them fluff their lines there, I suppose obviously... fluffing lines, but it's perhaps not appropriate to Havertz's header because it was so dominant and so good. But still, those were chances you had to bury, and they did it. And it was just insurance that was always going to be needed, because you know Spurs are going to roar back into it. And I wonder how deliberate it was to play on the counter. I don't know if it was. I think it might have been reactive, because again, as we said, they're on a irresistible attacking force, particularly at home, particularly when they've got the wind in their sails, the fans
behind
them. But as Luke
said, the confidence up front.
Oh, they had no conviction up front.
Yeah, sure, of course. But they kept getting there, though, right?
Richarlison came on and seemed to have all the conviction.
He was one thing. It's easy to be wise after the event, of course. And you know,
he was pumped when he came on.
He was someone you think, okay, could he have possibly started the game? Because Madison's in no sort of form whatsoever, right? He's in no form whatsoever. They could have had a shuffle and played Son a bit further back and played Richarlison up front, who would have at least occupied Saliba and Gabriel, who have been amazing all season.
But do you not think the plan would have been, though, to try and obviously try and press Arsenal, keep the ball, and basically stay in the game?
Yeah.
And then you bring Richarlison on.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, but obviously the way it kind of panned out was, well, let's bring Richarlison to get back in the game.
But they've got the thing about Tottenham is that they've got too many players out of form. So they've got, you know, Bentonka's not been great since he came back from injury. Apparently he's talking about carrying another injury as well. Maddison's been out of form. Højbjerg hardly ever plays. Basuma's form's dropped off. Saar has been good, but he obviously wasn't picked. And then you look at
Kulusevski's another one.
Kulusevski's kind of, he's really game. Yeah. And I think a lot of people think he could play better through the middle because he can influence the game a bit more. He's not got lightning pace. The other thing that's confusing about me, to me, is that and I don't know enough about as much about Spurs as a lot of people do, but everyone seems to talk a lot about how great Van de Ven and Romero are. And I understand that. And Romero, as we just said, he always likes to make things happen. He's always at the heart of it. And to be fair, he did take a lot of responsibility yesterday and tried to make things happen, got his goal, and could have had another goal. And it was fairly decent. His distribution's good. But the big thing, the big circle that you can't square about those two players and about the Spurs record is that they just don't keep any clean sheets.
They cannot stop
conceding goals. And I know part of it is the way Spurs like to play.
Well, that is the Postecoglou way, but
yeah, but
if he can
the top
find
teams
a way,
play like that and don't concede.
Yeah, well, of course, and that's the thing, that is the challenge for him, if they can find a way, because look at what Arsenal do. They play with intensity, they can press teams, they can keep the ball, and as you said, just phenomenal at the back.
Definitely, they're a much better team than Spurs, and I think that's everyone accepts
that. Is it unfair to say Tottenham use Arsenal as your template?
It might be poorly received as a piece of advice. Yeah, I don't want to extrapolate too much, but based on this game, the first half yesterday, you say, okay, so these players have got amazing reputation as defensive players. You know, everyone talks about how great they are. Fine, maybe they are, but you've gone into half time 3-0 down.
Yeah.
The other team have only had 27% of the ball. So in theory, you shouldn't have had to have done that much defending. Mm-hmm. And you cannot hold yourself up as a good centre-back if you are conceding set-piece goals like that. Mm. Those set-piece goals, particularly the second set-piece goal, was an embarrassment, a total embarrassment. And they need to accept that. Mm.
Mickey van der Ven is 23, though. And you would think he's only going to keep improving. And the pace he has is such an asset. And obviously, it's not to take away from anything you've said there, Luke, but it does feel like that partnership, him and Romero, is going to be a... It's going to be a potentially fruitful one, or miserly one, is perhaps what you want from them more. I think part of why Romero can run around so much is that no one can keep pace with Van de Ven. Mm. There's a point in the second half where an out ball was played. Martinelli's essentially just trying to run it as far as possible.
Oh, yeah,
and Van
de
Ven just eats up the ground. And that is a rare thing to see Martinelli just think, I can't keep up with this guy.
It's a rare thing for a defensive player.
Absolutely.
As well.
It's a huge asset.
And this is what Postecoglou's got to channel then. We're near the end of the season. If they finish fourth, that would be a great season for Spurs. It's now mathematically impossible for them to finish above Arsenal, so you've got to accept that.
Yeah.
Okay. But if they finish fourth, great. I actually think if they finish fifth, I think that's still a good season for Spurs, because you think about the gap between fifth and sixth, because the top three have all been very, very good this season, of course. So it's really, and then Villa and Spurs are the next two. So Spurs, whatever happened, I think they've had a good season is what I'm labouring to say. I think if they were in the Europa League, next season they'd be among the favourites to win.
Because Champions League teams don't drop down next year, do they?
They've got a lot to look forward to, whatever they have. And in the summer, you think to yourself, Postecoglou, right, great first season in charge of Spurs, whatever they do for the final few games. But there's, as Jim's pointing out, you know, Van de Ven with the pace and all these players have got stuff to work with, and to the board, you know, if they back him as well, see what you can do. I honestly think Spurs, it's an exciting time for them.
They're going in the right direction.
It's funny to say this; they've just lost the North London derby.
I just felt like,
but this Arsenal side this season, it's a bit like, you know, hark all the way back to that game they lost 4-1 at home to Chelsea. I loved it. It's brilliant.
Who they play next, by the way? That's going to be fantastic.
So great. So, but ultimately, Arsenal win. And they keep pace with Manchester City, and it's a huge win.
And I think really, you know, Spurs started with Højbjerg and Bentancur at the base of midfield. against Partey and Rice and Odegaard, it's a mismatch, really. I know Partey doesn't play an awful lot, but he's fucking brilliant.
He's back into form very quickly.
But Arsenal won, Jim. That's the important thing. And they put a bit of pressure on Manchester City, who then played Nottingham Forest, of course.
Yeah, they don't seem to feel pressure, though, do they? Because this
Chris
is just
Wood
completely
seemed to feel the pressure.
He did, yeah. Because Forest didn't actually play that badly.
They didn't play that badly, and old Wood missed...
Apparently the craze used to refer to anyone who wasn't from London as a foreigner. Yeah. And that's how I'm starting to feel about teams like Forest at the moment.
It's letting you down.
Yeah.
Massively letting you down.
It's letting the whole city down.
It is tight.
No reason to not.
But it's all building up to the 11th of May.
Yeah.
And Marcus's brave boys doing a number on them.
Look, it's all for one and one for London.
Yeah.
As the rest of the UK say.
Yeah. Yeah. They're traditionally very appreciative.
Very appreciative.
Of the breadbasket of their economy.
Go on, Benny. Oh dear. I mean, the intriguing one is, of course,
how can we have some more investment in the north? No, because you can't be trusted with it.
No, because you voted for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell Pete's not here, can't you?
Spurs play Man City, of course.
They do.
Yeah.
And they do pretty well against Man City, don't they? Particularly at home, and it is at Spurs. So who knows? And they will almost certainly desperately need those points, because the battle for fourth between them and Villa is brilliant, and actually one of the highlights of the remaining storylines, essentially, in the league. So,
yeah, I mean,
who knows?
You said at half time some of those Spurs fans were a bit confused. They might be a bit confused watching that one. But we shall see. But I think, ultimately, the favour for Arsenal lies at Craven Cottage, as you said, Luke. Mm. And we're talking about Arsenal and Manchester City.
Look forward
of
to that letting our fucking bet builder now.
Come on.
When Marcus chooses it.
Oi, how did I get on this week?
Yeah, well done, mate.
Thank you.
Team to beat Luton at home, is it?
Oh, you got back a winner.
See, I backed a winner as well.
Did you?
Arsenal to beat Spurs.
You did.
Oh,
yeah.
You did. Yeah. Fair enough. I think Andy backed Liverpool to beat West Ham, didn't he? And it was 2-2.
It was 2-2.
The bet was over at half two on the Saturday.
When Spurs got two back against Arsenal, I was standing in the stands just screaming, "Prostate cancer UK! Do it for prostate cancer UK!"
The bet had already gone, mate.
No, because of Brassel, he can't be trusted.
But that's the fact.
Apparently an expert. Fucking pathetic.
But you are focusing on your task and you got it
exactly,
right.
Exactly, got to do your job.
As did I, thank goodness, for a long time. It's been coming. But West Ham 2, Liverpool 2. Liverpool surely out of the title race now. They've gone, Jim. Call it.
Ask Mo Salah. That's what Mo Salah was saying to Jurgen Klopp.
He said, "I've gone.
The title's gone."
Yeah.
The title's gone.
Why are you bringing me on? What's the point?
Yeah.
Enjoyable game for the neutral.
It was, yeah. I mean, it would take a double collapse from Arsenal and City for Liverpool to get back into it now, you think. I mean, it's not mathematically out of it, but it does look unlikely, doesn't it?
I mean,
it's
5 points.
It's the manner of it, isn't it, as well? Yeah. It's the,
they're not going to win the title.
They just look completely drained of energy, don't they? Emotional energy and physical energy.
Yeah. It's strange, and it is quite, dare I even say the word sad, to see it end like this for Klopp. I mean, sad is too strong a word, actually. It's a little bit of a shame, maybe.
It's underwhelming, isn't it?
Underwhelming, yes, indeed. The fact is, though, they did win the League Cup, and that was incredible when they did. But if you look at Liverpool this season, some people thought maybe this was coming, even though they have kept pace, and they're still in it mathematically, and it's ultimately been a good season for them. When you've got so many trophies to play for and you end up winning just the one, sometimes that can feel like a little bit of a disappointment.
I think the big regret, surely, when all said and done, will be the Europa League.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because I think
it's the one that was missing for him as
exactly.
well.
He's not, because he's not won it, and because it was there for them. I think it was there for them, with possible exception of Bayer Leverkusen, which would be a big test. I mean, the way they capitulated at home to Atalanta was really disappointing.
And they had big chances that game and blah, 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 blah. But oddly, though, I felt that even in those games, and we've mentioned that Manchester United one, which was 2-2 at Old Trafford, and the Atalanta one, they still looked lively. They were just profligate. Mm. Whereas that has sort of changed and turned into, as you said, Jim, a kind of a running out of ideas and creativity a little bit. I've gone on about this game enough, so hopefully this is the last time I mention it. When they beat Fulham, it was just like the system, and they just kind of overwhelmed them. And again, the quality will just,
They look to me like Liverpool against West Ham. Look to me like they were trying like way too hard.
Well, I think he brought in a lot of the players that did win that game against Fulham, because obviously against Everton they were such a letdown. Mm. So he tried to do something a little bit different, and it nearly pays off. But the big talking point really is along with the result is Klopp arguing with Mo Salah on the touchline.
And what's the latest? What's the latest kind of understanding of what was actually being talked about there? Because I don't know what it was.
Well,
has it not been released?
I don't believe so. I mean, obviously Salah said after the game, "If I speak, there will be fire." Now,
yeah, and wasn't that after Klopp had said that it was?
It was as he was walking. It was as he was walking through the flash. The mix zone.
That's right. And the fact of the matter is, the fact of the matter, he says that he's registering to everybody, to the world, essentially, that he's pissed off. I mean, found his body language incredible, actually, when it happened, because if you see on the rare occasion a manager and player arguing, it feels like, you know, a petulant son having a go at their dad and all that. Because that's the kind of the dynamic.
Yeah.
This actually, and look, I understand maybe this afternoon something comes out and whatever. And of course, you don't know what's been said. So you do grasp at straws and you try and analyse the body language and all this kind of stuff. So we can only go on the little tiny bits that we saw. But
people are saying it's about a handshake, aren't they?
Yeah. I think some were saying that he was a bit slow coming off the bench. Klopp's like, right, up you come. Yeah. And it's like, look, we're still in the title race here. Stop mooching around. You've been crap the last few weeks. You know, come on, get on with it. But it was Salah's reaction to Klopp that I found really quite interesting, is that he stands there and, you know, the arms wide and all that kind of stuff. And then he starts pointing at Klopp. And I thought to myself, this is a guy who it came across like, oh, I'm on the same level as you, if you see what I mean. Mm. It didn't feel like he was a bit petulant. He was a bit this, that, and that. It felt like he was really angry. That may well be the last time we see Salah this season in Liverpool.
Is that serious?
Maybe.
I think what's likely is that it's two individuals in a high state of anxiety, where there's perhaps some sort of miscommunication, misunderstanding of what's happening there.
Could be as simple as that.
But yeah, I would be surprised if it was this huge issue behind the scenes.
But I think his goal scoring record against Spurs means he'll definitely start in this game.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, again, if I speak, there will be fire. I know.
Yeah, but I mean,
yeah, he kind of said it with a bit of a smile, didn't he? It looks worse written down than it sounded.
Well,
like I say,
I could be way over the top with my analysis there, and I think Jim, I hope for their sake, certainly, and I think probably you know what you're saying is more on the right lines. The reason why I wonder if you'll play much at all is because matched with that, he's been terrible,
absolutely.
And it's not a case of he's just missing a few chances. He's not trying. Like, yeah. That's been gone.
So that's the crux of the problem, right? So for me, it feels like, I don't know anything about it, really. I've just seen what everyone else has seen. But to me, it feels like it's a bit of a perfect storm. And you're right to bring that up, because ultimately, Jurgen Klopp is still the manager of Liverpool until the end of the season. He's got a right not to pick Mo Salah, which he didn't. And the reason he could say is because, I don't care. He's not playing well enough.
That's right.
And Mo Salah is probably thinking to himself, well, I should play every game because I'm Mo Salah and I've been the most important player to Liverpool over X amount of years. Mm. And you should give me the time to play myself back into form. And when he does bring Mo Salah on, it's what, 10 minutes to go and it's 2-2?
Yeah.
So he's probably just saying to him, go and make a difference then. Yeah. Go and do it. And Salah's like probably found that a bit patronising or something. But I don't think it'll escalate or anything like that. It's not in anyone's interest for it to escalate, chiefly because if Salah wants to go, he's not going to go to the end of the season anyway. Mm-hmm. There's going to be no one necessarily keeping him because Klopp's going to have gone and serve all his coaching staff, which is who we'll have the relationship with. And he's been linked to a move away anyway. Mm. So, I mean, there's no point in making it bigger than it needs to be, because all you've got to do is wait a few weeks and it'll be done.
Well, yeah, and we shall see how it plays out. But the difficulty for Klopp, as I say, is he needs players that give a damn. And Salah doesn't look like he. I mean, I
think he does just, care. I just
no,
think, he's,
okay,
I think
fine.
He's just a little bit
you,
of a funk.
You know what I mean? Clearly, he cares, but it's not good. And now it's like you're still in this title race. Yes, it seems incredibly unlikely that they're going to win it, and the percentages of them winning it now will be close to zero. But they're still alive. You've still got to keep going until the last moment. So I'm not sure he will start in the next game. I think that, you know, I was saying this before. I said, I think they've got to start Elliot, who plays with a lot of intensity. Gravenberch, who seems to be, you know, the same. And actually, it's that intensity and energy that they need. They don't have the quality of Salah, of course, but if Salah's not making runs and he's not in the spaces, it doesn't
But he
happen.
Has been under an awful lot of pressure because of the relative lack of contribution from other forward players. Hasn't he?
Yeah, but what you're talking about, Nunez's goals, for example. I mean, Firmino went as spells without goals, didn't he?
Firmino wasn't really a big goal scorer. He was a very, very unselfish player.
Okay.
Firmino's lack of goals was a different reason than Nunez's lack of goals, which is Nunez's lack of goals is he's
He'll shoot
some
from
kind
anywhere.
Of surrealist performer. Yeah.
Yeah. Liverpool were hard done by, though, or strangely done, should I say, with that moment when it was Gakpo who ran forward to challenge Areola. Mm. I mean, let's be honest. I understand the referee can blow up whenever the referee chooses to blow up. Mm. So I don't think it was like shockingly bad, but quite clearly when you see the footage, he's waving play on.
Yeah.
Like the ball was there. Like, as they say, he should have put the ball in the net.
Yeah, definitely. He should have. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Credit to West Ham though, by the way, because their kind of season's finished and Antonio got a nice goal. I always love seeing Antonio score.
Mm.
He's such a hard working, like selfless player.
Yeah.
And they're not the same team without him. Yeah. Like, he gives them, he sets such a tempo, well, such an example
for
them.
Their season isn't quite finished because they can still, I mean, they could still finish sixth. Again, it seems unlikely with the points difference and the way Newcastle are playing at the moment. But, you know, they're still in there. Bowen, of course, 16 Premier League goals, the most the West Ham players ever scored in a single campaign.
Yeah.
Seems sort of quite low on one hand, but then there was a lot of teams who would perhaps be in that bracket as well. But he's been great, of course.
Yeah. And he's got a contract until 2030. So either they'll get a fortune for him at some point if it goes that way, or they've got a guy who loves the club, who is sort of a symbol of it that they can build a team around for a long time to come.
Yeah. Loves the club so much that he's in a relationship with Daniel Dyer's daughter.
Exactly.
That's, you don't get more commitment to the clause
than
that.
You certainly don't. Exactly, yeah. David Moyes was obviously pleased with the point, and you know, as anybody would be, even though against this sort of slightly faltering Liverpool side, they're still Liverpool. He then paid tribute to Jurgen Klopp after the game.
It was a strange tribute, wasn't it?
It was a strange tribute. I mean, look, what I liked about it, though...
Maybe not the week for it.
No, maybe not.
What I liked, though, it was honest.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, as he said, you know, he's managed Everton and Manchester United. It's funny, because when he said, well, I've managed the two clubs that have got the biggest rivalry with Liverpool, I was thinking Everton... Yeah. I was like, Real Sociedad, was it? Man United! Yeah.
Were you Liverpool reserves?
Yeah, he said, I'm glad he's gone. He's fucking too big. His teeth are too bright. No need for any of that.
It's possible what Mo Salah said.
Indeed. Yeah.
Too big is hilarious.
I think it's like I think he's. Is it not a compliment saying, oh, he's just this perfect being sort of thing.
Too much charisma, too much
energy. But it really did. At the start, I was thinking, oh my goodness, this is like proper beat. And then he goes on and goes, oh, okay, all right, yeah.
He's not wrong, though, is he? That's one of the things. Klopp, it's to Klopp's huge credit that a lot of people will be delighted to see the back of it.
Yes, exactly.
Because you don't have to compete with him anymore. Because
totally.
He's got so much to give.
It was definitely
give.
Affectionate.
Yeah, did you see... did old Moyes have a little chuckle, a little pat on Salah's back when West Ham scored?
Yeah.
He did, didn't he?
He loves it, didn't he?
Yeah, he did that.
He was definitely smiling away.
Yeah, like Salah, I don't know what was going on. I don't know whether it was... because Salah was... I don't know whether...
David Moyes thinks, because of this rift between him, Salah and Klopp, Moyes thinks, well, I'm going to be fired from West Ham. Wherever I go next, Salah could be available. I'll just tap him up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have managed Manchester United.
You won't have to work back when you play for me, son. It's all about goals. It's all about goals.
I don't know. Do you know, there was an element of Jose Mourinho whispering in Pep Guardiola's ear about that Moyes and Salah moment.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
enjoyed it a lot. Now, by the way, everybody, before we go for a break, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts and you can see that pause button in the top right-hand corner of your phone, well, do tap it now to turn on your downloads. That way, your next episode of The Football Ramble is always ready and waiting for you, and you will never miss an episode. All right, coming up in the second half, we've got the relegation battle. We're off to Old Trafford again, and an interesting situation with the ball boy in Scotland. See you in a moment.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Can I just say one thing to you, babe?
Can I just say one more thing? 7-1.
Yeah, but like this game's gone. I am not asked by this game. I've gone. Me, I've gone this game, right? Can I say one thing to him?
Yeah.
If you continue with this bullshit right now, I promise you, I want to fucking knock you clean out. There's no way you're laughing.
No, you're right. I shouldn't be laughing. My apologies. Sorry.
So, are you going to tell all your followers that I'm better than you?
No, because you're currently 8-1 down.
Yeah, this game's got me. I'm not. I don't care about this game.
Well, welcome to the Football Ramble, everybody. That was Wayne Rooney playing FIFA against Ginge at 2 a.m.
Ginge is a YouTuber.
22-year-old YouTuber, yeah, when Wayne Rooney threatens to knock him.
I think they are actually friends.
Yeah. I mean, he does say, yeah, but he also says in another bit of the clip, you know I've got your address and I can be around in 20 minutes. Have you ever said that to a mate of yours?
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Thanks to Friend of the Ramble, Ashley, for sending that clip. You can become a Friend of the Ramble too by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble. You get access to the Discord where you can chat with us and other Ramble listeners and get ad-free episodes of The Ramble up front and on the continent. On the Discord this weekend, Luke was updating the Patreon subscribers on how his football went with Vish on Friday.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, basically, to translate that, everyone picked up on the fact that I said on Friday I was going to 2-foot Vish in football that night. Mm. But the football gods, I mean, I suspect Vish himself, decided that I was on his team. So yeah. It was only producer Finn that
It was an odd moment when you did the 2-foot.
I did it anyway. Yeah. No, producer Finn's team ran riot and gave us a good beating.
That's
so.
A shame.
Yeah, but that's how it goes.
Yeah, well, you know where he lives, so you'll be around there in 20 minutes to knock
him out.
You
got his address.
On the Wayne Rooney thing, that's why I like him. He's just the most normal bloke in the world. He's so normcore for a footballer. It's brilliant.
Mm. Yeah.
Most footballers wouldn't be doing that, would they?
No, but I don't know how normal it is.
Normal people threatening 22-year-olds on the internet.
No, but I'm just saying, he's playing FIFA at 2 a.m.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, he stayed up too late.
He's a father.
Yeah. Colleagues probably told him he used to come to the beach. Yeah, I'll be through in a minute. I'm just playing online.
Just need to threaten this young lad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
To be fair, Colleen's probably delighted. It's like, you know what? It could be worse than this.
It's been worse
than this. I'll just let him do it.
True. Well, let's go to Waz's old team, Everton. They secured their place in the Premier League for another season, as they do.
And Sean Dyche even acknowledged that his change of clothing has been a big part of it, Marcus. First spotted by you a number of weeks ago.
On this show, first spotted by me, but I think others had seen it.
Claim it yourself.
He looks great.
Yeah.
He does look good, you've got to say, in the old tracksuit. Yes, of course, Everton beat Brentford 1-0. A vital victory. Everton have had a fair few clean sheets this season.
Yeah, they've really picked up, haven't they? Mm. Obviously, they had the horrifying anomaly at Stamford Bridge, if you can call it an anomaly.
Well, it is. In their last handful of games, it is an anomaly, and you're right to call it horrifying and ridiculous.
But aside from that, I think, you know, lots of people are praising Dyche for, you know, navigating Everton through the points deduction, but it's tempting to look at the various problems that have come their way this season and think it's all one thing, isn't it? Like one big blob of problem.
Yeah.
But it's not a points deduction, is it? It's 2 points deduction. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's the appeal that reduced the first deduction as well, and that there's a sort of imminent takeover, which mm-hmm. is a really quite stressful thing. A lot of uncertainty for people at the club, for you know the staff and their jobs, like whether they stay up or not. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of difficult things to navigate that are multifaceted, and they've done it really well. And he made a point in the post-match about consistency of behaviours and that paying off. And I think that is what we're seeing, isn't it? Dominic Calvert-Lewin is a great example of that. He couldn't buy a goal a little while ago. Now he looks sort of back to the player that we all know he can be. There's a lot of players in there that are really delivering. Like Dwight McNeil as well looks really sort of energetic and fresh at the moment. There's a few players in there you can really, really praise.
Brian Thwaite's been good.
Yeah, he's been excellent. Although he's been sort of pretty consistently good throughout the season, but yeah. I think consistent behaviours paying off is essentially some sort of mantra there, and it's absolutely right. He's kept it simple, calmly weathered this storm, and I think done a really good job in really tough circumstances.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jim. I think that whatever you may think of Dyche and the football he plays, blah-de-blah-de-blah, in this job right now with Everton, you have to give him credit.
Mm. Oh, for sure.
You simply have to. And I don't say that reluctantly. I think some people may say that reluctantly. But he has. And again, other than that ridiculous loss at Stamford Bridge, defensively, they have been good of late. Pickford has looked like vintage Pickford at times. And they've got over the line. Scoring a lot of goals, but they've scored enough.
I think Bickford's got the second most clean sheets of any goalkeeper in the Premier League.
Behind
right?
Raya, who's obviously got that defence in front of him.
Which is amazing, given their position in the table.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy, really. Right. And I think Jim's right. They just keep everything tight and keep it basic and do the basic things well. And that's why I think we talked about the reaction to that big, heavy defeat against Chelsea. The players just looked authentically really pissed off with themselves. Like Tarkowski, I think, volunteered to come out and say afterwards, this isn't good enough. You know, this is embarrassing. It's the worst moment of my career. We've got to put it right. And to be fair to them, they have put it right. They've addressed that massive slump they're in at the right time.
Yeah.
They've not even needed to rely. I think they still got Luton and Sheffield United to play, and they've not even had to rely on those two games in the final three of the season to stay up. So they've hit the form at the right time. As ever with Everton, though, it feels like they just lurch from one bad season to another. So you've got to see what's going to happen next year. It's good that they're in the Premier League. It's good that they've preserved their status. But I mean,
presumably Dyche will be there next season. It seems that it would be pretty crazy to sack him. But you never know with the situation with the owners and all that kind of stuff. I just wonder with Everton, you know, when they've had managers who have kept them up, you think of Lampard not that long ago. You think of even maybe Allardyce who kind of took over and improved the results. It does feel like they're in that situation again, and then you go, oh, okay, right, we've survived. Right, let's kick on now next season, as you were just sort of mentioning, Luke. And then it doesn't kick on, and then they slump back and so on.
But it would have kicked on, wouldn't it, if they hadn't had that points deduction? So if you talk about the points they've got...
So you think that... So how confident would you be that Dyche can kick it on next season and maybe solid mid-table, let's say, really?
Well, if you take away the points deduction, they're 12.
Right.
So they're already solid mid-table.
So you think that with a bit of backing and so on, he can actually do something reasonably decent next
they
season?
Dyche can only control what he can control, and he's done that.
Fashion-wise, absolutely.
They'd have 44 points if they hadn't had that deduction. Mm-hmm. And I know that they'd need to be punished for what they've done, and I don't have any problem with that personally, but it's not Dyche and the players' fault. I mean, it's not their decisions. Their decisions are on the pitch, and on the pitch they've been good enough, easily good enough. They've been 10 points good enough, probably. In fact, this season, they might have even been 15 points good enough to stay in the league. Mm. So they are really putting the foundations down to become a mid-table side under Dyche because they are defensively pretty decent. If you look at their defensive record, it's by far the best defensive record in the bottom half. I think it might even be the best defensive record outside the top three. They can see a fewer goals than Spurs and Villa.
Yeah.
So defensively, they've got a platform for sure.
Yeah.
And it just, as ever, everything that's swirling around them as a club is what holds them back. So I mean, I can't predict the future, so I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what they're in contravention of and what they're not at the moment. But the fact remains that without that points deduction, they're a mid-table team.
Well, Dyche has called this his biggest achievement as a manager, keeping it,
which is
up.
A really, really damning indictment on the championship victory that they had in Burnley.
Yeah, I mean, Dyche has managed to come across as a little bit of a prat at times.
He's an absolute prat. No question.
And, you know, I'd have thought maybe
Jose Mourinho said the Europa League was the most important trophy in Man United's history. There you go.
Second was the Community Shield. He won that year.
That's right. That's right.
Part of a treble.
how big of an achievement is it for Daesh that he is featured in the new Blossom single?
Video.
He's not doing a chorus.
He's not doing a verse. Oh, I'd love to hear that.
That would be way better. Yeah.
More of a grindcore guy. Yeah. He's definitely more of a kind of like punk guy.
Yeah.
I think it's strange. I'm not that familiar with Blossoms. From as far as I can tell, they seem fairly generic. I do think
I agree with that.
If you have the opportunity to have Sean Dyche in your video, you just have to say yes to it.
But he's sort of leading
it.
Do it. Is he in charge of like a heist or something?
It looks that way, yeah.
He started to make a move towards some kind of music literate kind of branding, hasn't he, Dyche?
Maybe he'll end up on Jeff Shreve's new podcast.
Well, he could do. I think he's already been on it.
I think he's already been on an episode of it.
Yeah, he also was on another one fairly recently. He was talking a lot about the Hacienda. I used to go there all the time, apparently. Right. So yeah, I think he kind of fancied himself as a bit of a music guy.
You've got to be careful if you are in football and you start talking about music and stuff, because you could end up like Joey Barton.
Or Noel Gallagher.
Or Tim Lovejoy.
I mean, not quite the same chaps. They weren't really in football before, were they?
All twats.
I think Tim Lovejoy would say that he was.
Yeah, you could say
whatever you like about Marcus and he won't get offended, but if you say anything about Noel Gallagher, he gets fucking fuming. Look at him. Look at his face. He's gutted.
Sheffield United.
Ah, Newcastle used their Sheffield United voucher at the weekend.
They really did.
Yeah. I just didn't see this coming. Sheffield United relegate after a 5-1 defeat. The funny thing is, they could have been 2 or 3 up at half time.
They had a lot of chances.
Yeah, they really did.
They took those chances very much like a team who's won 3 Premier League games this season.
Yeah, and Chris Wilde was very honest. He went, the power of this league was just way too much.
Really telling, wasn't it?
It was.
And what else can he say, really?
Yeah.
Minus 63 goal difference. Yes, really, it's been something.
It's been a shocker.
It's a shame for them to get spanked on the day they get relegated, isn't it? But I think it has just really been the story of the season. And what I thought was really interesting was that Wilder named Oliver Arblaster as captain. And he's only 20. And it makes me think they're just looking to the future already.
Well, they have
thinking
to,
that we need to just rip this up and start again.
You've also got to philosophically ask whether it was the right thing to get rid of Paul Heckenbottom and bring in Chris Wilder, because they've not been better. Mm. They've arguably been worse. And at least you can make the argument that, you know, and a lot of Sheffield United fans will say, you know, like, maybe he was out of his depth and like wasn't really going anywhere and we needed to do something. And I understand that viewpoint. But actually, Heckenbottom was the guy who earned them the right to be in the Premier League.
We're talking with hindsight, you know.
Of course, but if you're gonna replace him with someone that you've already fallen out of love with in the past anyway, and it's not got better, it's actually got worse, then...
Well, I suppose, to sort of... add to what you're saying there, quite clearly you looked at the situation with Heckenbottom and Sheffield United. It was going to take something absolutely extraordinary for them to stay up, and it would have taken a manager who has been there and done it and so on, so which is why I get why they went for Wilder. But really, I don't think, you know, he's not a miracle worker, for crying out loud. He's not like some Allardyce type of figure. And to keep them up we all knew, really, months and months and months ago, even at the start of the season, like the heavy favourites to go back down. So you're right, maybe they should have stayed with Heckenbottom. He gets a bit more experience or whatever. But for Sheffield United, from the fans' point of view, I think there'll be a bit of relief almost. Yeah. I think for them, it's not nice. You know, I support a team who have been hammered and, you know, you just want to get out of the Premier League. You know, Luke, perhaps for different reasons, you know, yourself.
No, I don't know what you mean.
You kind of think, oh, let's just get back to the Championship and let's...
But it's about the manner, isn't it?
It is.
The manner. So I'm not suggesting they should be, you know, finishing eighth. But what I am suggesting is maybe they could at least have acquitted themselves like Luton have. You know, give their fans some moments, give themselves a chance, fight all the way to the end. They wrapped their hand in ages ago.
It's very difficult, though, I think, when it's so painfully obvious. I think with Luton, there was that whole sense from the fans to the manager to which would have fed into the players of, my goodness, we're here.
Yeah, but Rob Edwards is a much more positive character than Chris Wilder.
Oh, he is, but I think...
Which counts for a bit, I think.
Yeah, Sheffield United, though, have been in the Premier League fairly recently, and they've you know,
under Wilder, and they were good. Right,
right, exactly. Whereas Luton, I think they've still got that kind of euphoric feeling of being in the Premier League, and it's kind of taken. Now it looks like it's slow. The cracks are really sort of becoming a lot bigger, even though they're still in it because Forest are down there as well. But I think for Sheffield United, they'll be...
It's a weird...
They can't wait for next season to start.
No, fair enough. But it's a weird transition that Chris Wilder's been through. because like he was a really exciting man. I can remember his Northampton Town side were one League Two when Portsmouth were in it, and they were fucking amazing. They were really good.
Yeah,
like he's done amazing things. He won League One with Sheffield United as well. Like he, at the lower league level, they've done not only amazing things under teams have done amazing things under Wilder, but in a quite an interesting kind of progressive way as well.
Oh yeah, but he's surely those are clubs that he's joined at a time when they are progressing, right? Whereas now this is sort of like a firefighting job, isn't it? Which is a really really different thing.
Maybe it just doesn't suit him. Yeah,
the fact is they played well. They missed chances. They end up losing 5-1. Yeah. Like, that's just.
I think it's worth a brief word on Newcastle as well, who've kind of really quietly put themselves really firmly in contention.
They're
for
ending
probably
strongly.
Sixth place there. There was a time where it looked like they might not make Europe at all, but they've got a really, really good chance of making the Europa League.
Yeah, they have. Well, they've won four of the last six, whereas Manchester United have only won one. So Manchester United have been helping them out, it's fair to say. But yeah, Newcastle have been great. I mean, Isak looks fantastic. Unreal. What a run of form he's
such
on.
Such a good finisher.
Yeah,
he really is.
That first goal where he runs offside to get back onside. Brilliant. Yeah. Such good forward play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. After the game, the Premier League posted on X saying, following their defeat to Newcastle, Sheffield United are relegated, pending Everton and Nottingham Forest points deduction appeals. The post has since been deleted.
It's mad.
Bizarre, yeah.
Well, they've contributed to their own conspiracy.
We might give them another 20 points. You never know.
Give them Matisse the login. What's going on?
Oh, dearie me. But yeah, so it's interesting down the bottom. I mean, you would think that it's between just Forest and Luton, but Burnley are in there. Manchester United won. Burnley won. A precious point at Old Trafford.
Which is confusing because Man United are apparently an absolutely brilliant team.
Well, they are. I mean, Ten Hag said after the game, we are one of the most dynamic and entertaining teams in the league at this moment. He's right.
In his own way.
He's spot on. I can't agree more with the man. I find myself warming more and more to him.
It takes
day.
A special kind of arrogance, though, to say that with a straight face, where you've just played Burnley at home and had less possession than them. You're Manchester United.
It's stunning stuff. They've drawn five out of the last seven matches. I mean, fans were booing when he subbed off Mainu and Rasmus Højlund for Diallo and McTominay.
Anthony took his goal well, you have to say, though.
Yeah, it was a genuinely excellent goal. Yeah. And he's you know, obviously there's a mistake involved, but he's got a lot to do and he managed to do it. Yeah. First Premier League goal of the season, though, which tells its own story, doesn't it?
I think we should give Anthony his credit, yeah, for a change, you know, fair enough. With regards to Ten Hag, though, I mean, he's not going to be there next season, is he? Surely.
It would be hilarious.
It'd be brilliant.
Was, wouldn't
Jimmy,
it?
Jimmy, I mean, where's the campaign trail, because I want to get on it.
There was quite an interesting conversation on Dutch TV over the weekend between Ibrahim Afellay and Rafael van der Vaart, who were doing punditry in the Eredivisie. And
van der Vaart does like
he does not pull punches, does he?
No, but Afellay was saying that he thinks that Ajax need to, you know, basically do everything they can to get Ten Hag back. And van der Vaart was like essentially just shoving the boot right in. So, well, Erik ten Hag, something like Erik ten Hag's doing his very best to be out of a job in the summer, so I'm sure it'll be doable, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel it feels unlikely that a club the size of Man United, with the hierarchy they've now put in place and the kind of ownership they've got, taking care of the football side of things, would stick with Ten Hag after this.
I mean, let's be honest, Newcastle are probably going to finish higher than, so Manchester United will probably finish seventh.
Ten Hag keeps comparing Man United, his Man United team, to like these glorious Man United teams under Ferguson. Yeah. Well, he just keeps volunteering this information out.
He's taken a dig at the pundits and asked for them to be patient. He said people forget that the Manchester United team of 2004-05, they didn't play great football. And that was when Ferguson was building a new team around Rooney and Ronaldo. And also when Jose Mourinho came into Chelsea, and it was at the time, I think, a records points tally, wasn't it?
Yeah.
95 points, something like that.
Yeah.
They won the league. He said they were building and it took time, but everyone forgets, even the players who were in the team, and again, like, just.
But you know, if you're building a if you're building a house, and the house is half built and it looks shit,
Like that's
14,
made of sand.
Yeah, there's 14
Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah, the windows are terrible.
Yeah.
And it's about to fall down.
Yeah.
You can't just say it's not finished yet.
No, no,
I can see that's a shit house.
Yeah, it's going to fall down.
It's terrible.
Wait for me to finish. It has fallen down. Yeah, but they've got a cup final to look forward to.
They have.
You know.
Yeah. Which is wild, isn't it? To think
yeah, it is quite amazing.
another cup final, yeah. But the funny thing is, when they play Burnley at home and it ends 1-1, you think, yeah. And the way the game, like Ten Hag says, oh, we're one of the most entertaining teams. Like, yeah, because suddenly it was just a madhouse. It was an open game. Now, when a bigger side at home, they get pegged back and it's 1-1, you think, that's a bit embarrassing. Now, what you would see, any other the big sides, they go, right, lads,
we have to go on and win this game. Right, pressure. We go, push them back. And suddenly that the Burnley goal, if they were at Arsenal, Man City, Spurs, Villa, whatever.
They'd be overwhelmed for the next 10
overwhelmed.
Minutes,
They would be like, how dare you do that to us? Against Manchester United, it was like a school match. It was suddenly like, oh, it's all open.
Yeah.
Bang, 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 up either end, any team could nick it. It's just remarkable.
But when Erik ten Hag is talking about how entertaining his Man United side
is, he's right.
He doesn't mean the same thing that you mean.
No. I know, but we use different. The same word. We dream the same dream.
You don't want the same thing. Definitely not. Definitely not.
Deary me. Burnley, though, have only lost one of the last eight games. Yeah. Now, we've been talking about Luton and Forest, but Burnley are in there. I mean, if they can survive... It would be remarkable.
There's a feeling here that it might just be a little bit too little too late. Though,
yeah, well, they've got a tough run in, haven't they? They've got Newcastle next, who we've obviously have got a lot to play for. And then Spurs, same case there. And then Forest on the last day. So if it does go to the last day, that'll be one to keep an eye on for sure.
Oh, that would be absolutely enormous. I mean, Luton themselves, they've got Everton now. Obviously, Everton are safe, but they're doing okay. Then West Ham away and then Fulham. So yes, I mean, Luton, you would say, have the... sort of preferable set of fixtures, although Forest, as you mentioned, you know, Sheffield United.
I mean, it's impossible to predict these things.
Well, it would be
because these teams don't win games.
Yeah.
Like between them all season, they've won 18 games.
Yeah.
So they're not going to, it's not going to be a huge amount of points being picked up. It could be a really, really low points total to be safe this season.
Yeah.
Really could.
Well, yeah, indeed. Of course, next season in the Premier League, we'll have Leicester City.
They're back.
They've done it.
That's one in the eye for, and you're probably not going to remember this, but there was, when we talked about Leicester being brilliant about two or three months ago, we got a load of stick from Championship fans saying, oh, you obviously don't watch the Championship. Well, let's hear from you now. Honestly, let's hear from you now. This is like when the fans at the football matches kick off and the players get to say something back.
There we are.
Say something back now.
Cup your
ear to them.
Up your arses.
He's cupping his ear. He's cupping your ear.
I'm cupping everything I can cup.
Jamie Vardy celebrating with Dennis Wise. What have we got to say now?
Yeah, what was that about?
Came out of nowhere, didn't it?
Yeah. So their promotion back to the Premier League was confirmed on Friday night because Leeds lost 4-0 to QPR, which is
I watched that in the pub and
there was you and Dennis.
I was coincidentally with a friend of Vicious who's a QPR fan.
Right.
And we walked into the pub just as the game was kicking off and he was doing the usual QPR thing. Oh, we're shit. Yeah. We're absolutely shit. Like, there's no way...
He's not that wrong, is he?
They are shit. They were 17th at the time. So he's like, there's no way we're going to win. I'll keep an eye on it, but I'm not bothered.
Yeah.
There were loads of Leeds fans in there because obviously Leeds are such a big club. There's fans everywhere.
Yeah.
Even though this is a pub in South London. By about the third goal going in, this QPR fan was like glued to the screen. He couldn't believe what was happening. Yeah. And the Leeds fans had all disappeared.
Superb.
Championship football can get you like that.
It really can. But the surprising thing was that Vardy wasn't involved in the celebrations because Enzo Maresca hosted a celebration for the players and staff at his house to celebrate. As you could imagine, there was a bit of drinking, some cigars and all sorts on the go.
Yeah.
But Jamie Vardy missed them. He was with his wife. And they were FaceTiming Dennis Wise.
Was his wife trying to get some kind of legal advice, perhaps?
Maybe. Well, Dennis Wise is in Italy right now. He's one of the bigwigs at Como.
What a gig for Dennis
it's
Wise.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Having been out of that type of gig since, 2009?
Yeah, and being quite bad at it. Like, Cockney Mafia out, he's gone to Como.
And let's leave the word Mafia alone.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. Cockney Mafia out.
I know.
But Vardy's not going to get involved in this kind of low-level celebration when he was able to celebrate. As Jim always rightly says, when his Jamie Vardy's stag weekend won the Premier League, they were celebrating at Jamie's house then, weren't they?
They were. And to be honest, I'm surprised he's not involved because he is the ultimate ringleader with this sort of thing. But is it a sign that he's slowing down in his old age?
I said this to you guys, I think, a couple of weeks ago. Jamie Vardy, I wouldn't be surprised. I know all the stories about him and stuff, which I'm sure are true. I wouldn't be surprised if Jamie Vardy spends the summer living like a monk because he really wants to mug as many people in the Premier League office. It's basically one last rodeo, isn't
definitely.
It? Jamie Vardy next season is Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon.
Ooh.
He's too old for this shit.
In every Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, but he's gonna do the business.
Yeah.
He's 37 years old.
I think in the first Lethal Weapon movie, I think Danny Glover was 43.
He was talking about being too old for his character. And then there was four of the buggers, you know. It's absolutely incredible.
Vardy's Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
I don't know who Mel Gibson's going to be. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
But there's going to be some hearts broken by Vardy in the Premier League next season, for
sure. Vardy's kind of... No, but I think Vardy is much more like Mel Gibson's character. Is that...
Do you mean his fictional character or his real-life character?
No, obviously Lethal Weapon. He's got that kind of that stare.
Yeah.
And the unpredictability.
The charisma.
Yeah.
The Hollywood leading man.
I think that's it, yeah.
I mean, there's no chance he's going to do like a Paul Merson, is there? Because when Paul Merson helped Portsmouth get promoted to the Premier League, he kind of gracefully bowed out, so I can't do it in the Premier League.
You were talking about the Kevin Phillips did that recently, weren't you? Talking about how he used to do that.
Yeah. He became like a championship gun for hire. Yeah, yeah.
Unless he fancies a bit of Serie B with Como.
Oh, now you're talking.
Como.
I can't see someone of his character he's surely not going to be able to resist playing the Premier League for one last season.
I would have thought. I want him to see him back. Mm. I really do want to see him back. The League One and League Two seasons concluded at the weekend. Derby are back in the Championship. My goodness, they've suffered of late, but they're back.
And the local, I think it's BBC Radio Derby commentator, was very emotional about it, wasn't he?
Very emotional.
And I think that's understandable. Some people said it was a bit over the top, but actually, given the Derby's travails and how a lot of the fans thought they were going to be without a club, you can see why it's very emotional for them to get promoted. They've been good this season.
Them and Pompey.
Yeah.
How about that?
Well, they haven't been able to live with Pompey. But there's no shame in that.
97 points.
Big celebration on the Southsea Common this weekend.
Was there?
For the Pompey players and the fans, yeah.
And were you there?
I wasn't there, no.
Save yourself for next season.
Football with Vish, wasn't I?
Now, we mentioned Doncaster's incredible turnaround on Wednesday's show last week. They secured their place in the playoffs, finishing fifth. They were 22nd in February. Then won 13 of the last 18 games.
And momentum was massive in the playoffs.
Glorious.
It's massive.
Glorious.
Some great stories. Crawley Town's also a great story. They were favourites for relegation and finished in the playoffs as well. Bromley in National League, they could go into the League Two. They won their playoff semi-final. Yeah. They go to Wembley in the playoff final for the National League. Incredible. They have to rip their pitch up if they get promoted because it's a
celebration.
Yeah, it's just a traditional thing you do in that part of Kent. Yeah.
Pitch invasion, then... Take it with you.
Yeah, take it with you.
Exactly, yeah. Before we go, though, we promised you some ball boy chat. During St Mirren versus Rangers, there was a ball boy who... Now, was he sent away by the referee or did St Mirren kind of sub him in? Either way, he was he had the ball and Rangers player Leon Balogun went over to take a throw and he basically just chucked the ball away.
Mm. Yeah.
And the referee, understandably, was thinking, hang on, this is affecting the integrity of the game here. Mm. I suppose signalled for him to be taken away.
Yeah,
but we're not having this.
The kid has a mohawk.
Yep,
and he struts away like the hardest man in Paisley.
Yeah,
like he will be telling that story in pubs probably now. Yeah, even though he looks about 12. Yeah. Like he is.
If he walked
made
to me
a
now,
name
he,
for himself,
he would be the hardest bloke in the studio.
Definitely.
what I love though, it was after 8 minutes. 8 minutes in.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. But I know people might think it's a bit over the top. That's proper refereeing. We've all got to be involved in the integrity of this, otherwise we're done.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he did the right thing. I mean, he didn't give him a red card. Some people say he was sent off. He wasn't sent off.
He should have banished a red card, although maybe that's what the kid wanted.
You can't red card a ball boy. You can't red card a ball boy.
It'd be so funny if he did. But then nowadays, with the ball boys and the ball people, should I say, not boys, they don't actually hand the ball.
They're supposed to put it on the cone, aren't they, in the Premier League?
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's just to stop that exact kind of thing happening, because when Eden Hazard kicked that kid's head in, people were fuming about it, weren't they?
Yeah.
That kid, by the way, at the time...
Yeah, if he will put his head on the cone...
he was about 17, that kid, as well, wasn't he? I think he was only a ball boy at Swansea because, like, his old man, the chairman, or something. Yeah,
there was a link.
So you've got to be careful. You can't go around having a sport involving the physical abuse of children.
Certainly not. No.
Definitely not.
That's right.
About Tim Henman that time when he smashed a ball at that kid.
Wimbledon, yeah.
Got disqualified, didn't he?
He did. He got chucked out of the tournament.
Yeah.
Poor old Tiger Tim. But he came roaring back.
Kind of.
And he got us all going.
Roaring back to a couple of semis, didn't he?
Four semis.
Four semi-finals.
There we are.
Yeah, good on him.
There we are.
What an amazing career.
It's England-esque.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Do join us on Wednesday. And remember, footballramblelive.com is the place to go and get your tickets to see us live at the London Palladium. It's going to be epic. Do follow us on X, TikTok, YouTube and Instagram at Football Ramble, and follow us on Spotify as well. There we are, everybody. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you on Wednesday.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
The Championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.